Hey guys, welcome back to the IkeCast. This is Chris, and I'm with my co-host as always, Ike.
Hey guys, thank you for joining us. I know we're one day late, and there was a scheduling conflict for us. So thanks for tuning in. Really appreciate it always
Yeah.
when you do.
It was a unique scenario where there was like a dual scheduling conflict. It was like, wow, both of us can't do it at the right time. But yeah, we're here on our Sunday, which is sort of like our unofficial second possible day that we could do this. Yeah, let's go through it. I mean, specifically in the news segment, let's get straight into our war room. I wish I had like a CNN like style graphic that could pop up, or like that didn't like newsroom sort of thing that pops up. But
Sort of like that ticker tape, like that
exactly.
you.
And so, but yeah, here on the war room this time, there's one story that I want to touch on specifically that is kind of it's an older story, in the scheme of things. It's something that I didn't pick up when it first happened, and it threw me for a loop, because it was like for me, it's an incredibly important story, right? That really wasn't like covered in a way that like I could see it. Now, for context's sake. Right, I'm Canadian, right? And as part of that is hearing about US news, specifically in this case, sorry for being too vague, is Kamala Harris when she was in Central or South America at some sort of summit. And she said, she made a statement which inherently was incredibly strange. Sort of like it goes against, it throws me for a loop because I'm like, you're saying something that's obviously wrong. Right, legally speaking, like you're definitely not getting this correct, and it's strange to me that someone who is a lawyer, right, could say something that obviously is not legally true. And what this is that during this little summit or meeting in Central South America, she made this remark about when it came to, I think they were in Guatemala, weren't they?
It was in Guatemala, and she said that do not come, you'll be turned back.
Yeah, she made she made this statement of like, yeah, just do not come, right? Like she's telling essentially refugees, right? And asylum seekers, do not come to the southern border, right? Don't do it. And you pause and you think and you're like, what? Like, isn't like literally in international law like their legal right? Like it threw me for like this is a lawyer saying this.
All right, before I respond to that, Chris, I think I found the tone.
The
That
town.
did you did you
Oh,
hear
that
that?
DDD. Yeah.
Okay,
Okay.
that's the
Yeah,
breaking news.
the breaking news ticker tape.
Okay,
Yeah, absolutely.
sorry. Sorry. I had to add that in there.
Yeah, well, it's
Okay.
yeah.
So, I mean, I think, the so members of the UN and United Nations, they've all signed on to the UN Refugee Convention, right? A majority of them signed on to it, which,
Yeah.
of 1951, which is which are the protocols or protocols that are in place, that states, are expected to cooperate in giving refuge,
Yeah,
right? And
the resettlement of refugees with and the distinction is very specific, right? You know, it really applies to like for refugees, it's a catch-all term for anyone in an area or location that is in a significant amount of distress, and they use war as sort of the baseline example. Natural disaster is another aspect of like, that can apply for refugee status. Where asylum.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, where asylum is fits more on a specific scale about a person, it really is more on an individual scale where the asylum cases apply.
Let's
Let's unpack
talk
that.
about so actually, within I can speak from the US, right? In US, there isn't a distinction between refugee or an asylee, except to the extent of where you're applying for, refugee. Okay, so a refuge. So if you're outside of the US, you go through a refugee settlement process, right? There's refugee camps, you go through that. You're requesting refuge within the US, right? But it's still, you are escaping political strife, you are escaping environmental catastrophes that might be impacting, right? Yeah. So that's refugee. When it comes to asylee, that typically, the term asylee is for you requesting asylum within the country, right? So it might be like, you know, we're parsing it out, and this is an oversimplification. So guys, you know, it's a lot more complicated than that. What I'm trying to do is, it is an oversimplification just for discussion purposes. Okay. But you know, you're requesting asylum within the United States, right? Within the U.S., you're here. You file your asylum application. Typically, if you're coming from abroad, you've already been processed. You're coming in as a refugee, mm-hmm. and then there's a resettlement process here within the U.S. Okay, you usually are going through a nonprofit that helps with the resettlement.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, and it helps you if you have family members, because they can assist with the resettlement process.
Yeah,
yeah, with but the resettlement
this,
process.
Yeah, like fundamentally, this is a right that has been guaranteed in the post World War II era, right?
But Chris, it is dependent upon each country.
Absolutely.
How much they're going to, you know, how many, you know, individuals or families are going to be allowed to be resettled within the U.S. So yeah, we are sort of parsing it out, refugee and asylum, but with both of them, the underlying, you know, premise tenet is that you're requesting, you know, safety, right?
Yeah.
You're coming in for a safer, better life, right? Whether it's through a refugee, right? So that's the thing, is that, you know, it's not that United Nations dictates you have to, you must take 300,000 refugees.
Yeah, because they're not going still to apply this to, you know, like, hey, listen,
well,
you're,
right.
You know, it's like, you, small country here, I guess everyone has to take the amount, you know, it's up to countries, but they have to be able to show that they're not, you know, arbitrarily.
Yeah.
You know, like, denying people, that they're following, you know, the conventions, that, you know, that there is an appropriate cap, you know, based on population, right?
Right.
But that's always up to individual nations. There is no, the UN is largely toothless to this extent.
Right. And let's keep in mind, like, the Refugee Convention, the UN Refugee Convention of 1951, it was drawn up in the wake of World War II.
Yeah, right? Specifically the Holocaust, right? Like, there was a lot of push, you know, to recognize the fact that there are a lot of people, you know, who were, you know, trying to leave Nazi Germany were denied, right?
Yeah.
And this was, it's the bridge too far. It's like, holy crap, we could have, you know, there, so many people could have, you know, survived the atrocities of this, you know, the atrocities committed by the Nazis were essentially allowed, right, by anti-Semitic policies of the time.
Right, right. And, you know, we have to keep in mind, the key part of, you know, the treaty was, you know, it makes clear that refugees have the right not to be sent back to a country where they're going to face threats to their life or freedom, right? Yeah. Where they're going to face persecution. And that, that's used, it, you know, that's what you have to establish when you're coming to, you know, when you're filing for asylum in the United States and you're requesting, refuge, right? Asylee status. Is you do have to, so here's the thing is, you know, Chris, here in the United States, and I think it's the same with Canada as well, you need to be able to establish that you are going to be persecuted by,
based on specific, like, criteria, you know,
right? But typically, right, but the underlying is that you're going to face threat of life, liberty, freedom from a institution backed by the government. So it could be police, right? It could be law enforcement. It could be the government itself having policies which impact your your life and your freedom. So
yeah,
that's the whole idea behind it. And I do want to qualify, Chris, here in the U.S., we have something called TPS or temporary protected status. And what that means, and that actually is a carve out for if there's a natural disasters.
Yeah.
Right. And those typically will get renewed on a, you know, for 18 to 24 months at a time, right? Just in case country conditions change, country is able to recover, well, then TPS status goes away, right? So, yeah. I mean, so it's a cup, and I know I'm sort of going into the weeds of things, so yeah. For which I apologize, but that, you know, certainly back to what Kamala Harris says, Kamala Harris, she's like, don't come.
Yeah.
Okay, don't come, and if you do come, you're going to be turned back. And, you know, and that's not what, you know, the United States stands for, yeah, right?
It's not the policy of the United States government. No, it's not the policy of the Biden administration and their new immigration proposals.
Sorry to interrupt, but I think a large part of that, like, push this rhetoric is to counteract the, you know, Republican critics that are saying, you know, that the administration, because this administration, there's a spike of people trying to cross America's southern border, not, you know, reflecting on what's happened in the last 4 years and why there's such a huge spike is because
there was a significant hampering and slowdown and intentional, you know, they did everything in their power to intentionally reduce, you know, legal, you know, immigration. Refugees are legal immigrants. Right.
Yeah.
You know, like, you can show up, and as long as you present yourself at a port of authority, right, at the, you know, at the time of entry, right?
Port of entry, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, you're able to, you're able to, you know, try to build into that status. And then, of course, you have to prove it, right? You know, so you, and these processes take a lot of time. A lot of people, you know, have to, you know, and there's a ton of, you know, instability all across, you know, the southern United States, oddly enough, caused by the United States, right? And all across southern America, right? There's a huge, you know, there's a ton of instability caused specifically by, you know, the United States and its sort of...
Well, like, it was the policies, right. There was a lot of policies, you know, in place, which, you know, over the last 4 years, your last administration, which really impacted the, you know, we talk about, you know, the crisis in the southern border, but the crisis was created by the previous administration,
mm-hmm.
right, to a large degree. You know, there weren't allowed, you couldn't come in and you couldn't so the way, you know, it's you at the port of entry, you say, I'm seeking asylum or I'm seeking asylum. And then you get processed into the system, so to speak. Right. Mm-hmm. The U.S. also had a policy where, and this was, you know, in the Obama administration, actually the Obama administration had been taken to court on this because they at some point they were separating families, and so it was litigated, and what came out of that particular case was that, you know, you couldn't separate, that separating families, minor children from their parents, was cruel and unusual punishment.
Yeah. And
so you had to keep the family unit together. I believe it was that you couldn't keep children in detention for, I think, 72 hours. Now, guys, please don't, because that, you know, this is...
So, but yeah, taking all this into account,
right.
We have, like, this framework that exists. Right. But to say something as, please don't come. Like, like, she's saying it like she's trying to help them.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, what? It was so strange and tone deaf and going against international law, going against... international commitments, treaty. It sounded like a freaking treaty violation. All of it.
Yeah. But you know what? I find that Kamala Harris ends up being tone deaf, and I don't know if it's that's just the way she is, or you know, that's her delivery. But yeah, it's
I think it's a mixture of I think you're absolutely right. It's a mixture of something like maybe personal, just like how she like delivers certain things, but also like, you know, her as a candidate wasn't great. Like she got torn up by Tulsi Gabbard of all people.
Right.
During the debates, because Tulsi essentially ripped apart her record. Right.
Right.
And Tulsi's not a good candidate by any means, right? Like she's, you know, she has her own issues, and you know, it's surprisingly, you know, like despite all of that, like Tulsi was able to trash Kamala. Kamala's really like what it was her qualification to be, you know, VP in the VP pick, right? Was, you know, seen as meant by many as essentially an outcome, you know, towards some sort of like, you know, like doing the reverse Obama, right?
Right.
And like whatever it was though, she wasn't a good candidate, and she and it's like she's like failing upwards in the best way. And then, you know, as Attorney General of California, she was responsible for a series of horrible cases and miscarriages of justice, right?
Yeah.
You know, ensuring that people, you know, weren't given, you know, proper, you know, either due process or when new, you know, new distinct information comes out, they're not given, you know, like cases aren't reopened because she's essentially just trying to keep her win record, you know, clean, you know, and this is a equivalent across all sort of this is just prosecutorial misconduct that occurs everywhere, right? Like all prosecutors across all things, they don't want their cases overturned, right? They want to keep their win record.
Right. So, you know, Chris, I have to, though, I have to say that I do agree that, you know what, to really, you know, have an effective policy at the southern border, you know, the countries do need to work together in addressing the issues that are driving them from their homes.
Yeah. Well, and we have to also remember, and we have to, you know, keep it within our understanding that the U.S. has caused a lot of the instability, right, all across the southern United States during the Cold War, right? They built, you know, like, you know, they built in puppet dictatorships. They ensured that, you know, like people like Pinochet, right, you know, can stay in power, right? They, like, they're reaping what they're sowing, right? Ensuring that these things continue. And, yeah, like, these refugees are refugees of horrible, you know, Cold War era, you know, policies. You know, I wish there was a better solution. I wish there was, like, some sort of way. But the refugee system already is, like, under Trump was overburdened. And it's only getting worse.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a number of things, right? I think messaging was wrong. I think, you know, you can be compassionate with, you know, we can be compassionate and have a more organized system. I can't say, you know, I don't think that don't come or you're going to be turned away. I think that was an attempt to be have a hardline position.
Yeah.
Because there is, you know, that, you know, there is that, there is the, let's face it, anti-immigration sentiment by a significant percentage of the population, voter population, right?
Yeah, well, it so, is the I mean, number there's one issue for Republicans, right? Their number one issue is, you know, is border security and immigration.
Right.
Right?
Right.
You know, some, like, it's you know, it's the old dog whistle of like, hey, don't look at all these important economic policies, worried about, you know, poor brown people showing up, right?
Right. So I you know what, I and I know you and me possibly, you know, disagree on this, but I think, you know, by giving her the southern border issue, is she's almost set up to fail, because, you know what, the southern border issue is it requires massive amount of oversight, enforcement, policy review, you know, and they're all very unpopular.
Yeah, these are unpopular positions, but it's positions that they get themselves into. They don't need, like, don't come. That she could have not have talked about this issue at all. Yeah. But they chose to wade into this water for the specific purpose of, like, trying to score political points with people who will never agree with them.
Yeah.
Right? And that, to me, that's, you know, that is a bridge too far. I don't see it as an effective use of the time there, and it just makes the America look more and more heartless.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't a good policy move. It wasn't a good thing to, you know, speak about. Everything that, like, that it attempted to do, it sort of fell apart. And, you know, the media's insistence of trying to keep it quiet, you know, the fact that, you know, I didn't really hear about it up here when, you know, I should have, right? Mm-hmm. This is an important thing. This is, like, a gaffe of gaffes, you know? And, yeah, what can I say? It surprised me that a lawyer could say something right. like that. And not see the foolishness or the irony in it.
Yeah. It's interesting, Chris, that AOC, you know, I think, you know, you're reiterating what you said. It was that, you know, seeking asylum at any U.S. border is 100% legal method of arrival.
Yeah.
Right? It's not a right. Remember, we have this conversation between right and privilege, right?
No, but you don't have a right to that status. Right?
No, you don't.
But you do have a right to come and try to claim that status.
Yeah, I think we're parsing. Yeah. But, you know, seeking asylum at the U.S. border is 100% legal method of arrival, which is correct, right? But, more specifically, you said that, you know, U.S. has spent decades contributing to regime changes and destabilization in Latin America. Mm-hmm. When you set, and you know, she used this these words that, you know, when you set somebody's house on fire, you can't blame them for fleeing it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Right. And that's what she's, you can take out, we need to address the root causes, but you have to recognize what those root causes are and how we collectively, because this isn't it's not just a U.S. issue, right? It's a Central American issue that does need to be addressed.
Yeah, I mean, if we want to solve this issue of the border crisis, we have to solve the issue of
the region.
Yeah, of the region. Yeah. Which, yeah. And, you know, AOC is correct. It's, you know, the U.S. is to blame for the instability with regime change that was commonplace all throughout.
Right.
You know, the latter half of the 20th century. Moving on from this topic, because I think we have discussed.
Yeah, but it. I was going to say, can we move to the next topic, which was vaccinations? An interesting article came out this week, Chris, right? Where it was that if you're in terms of the COVID deaths that they're seeing, there's more, there's the individuals who are vaccinated, the deaths are happening from those who are not vaccinated.
Yeah. All right. I want to come back to this in just one second, but specifically I want to go to the next thing. But I want to pause here very quickly.
Okay, sure.
Sort of collect what the next major thing is. Sorry, and we're back, a little bit of technical difficulty there, but moving on to the very important sort of new thing to examine, which is there was a report about essentially the cause of the new vaccination deaths, right?
Yeah.
People examining, you know, what are the new, what does the data show involving, you know, vaccinations, involving COVID, right?
Yeah.
Like what is the data showing us? And as it turns out, the data is showing us very, very clearly that there is
a correlation between vaccination, right, and not vaccinated and deaths.
Yeah, there is a correlation, and a specific one is majority of people who are now, you know, dying from COVID. I believe it's 99%.
Yeah,
99% of people dying from COVID didn't have the vaccine.
Yeah.
Right? The vaccine is proving to be effective. You're getting it. It means that you're not going to die from this, you know, horrific, you know, plague. I want to call it a plague because that's what it is. It's, you know, it's a plague that's been, you know, sort of forced upon us by, you know, as it turns out, you know, gross Chernobyl level mismanagement.
Right. Yeah, that's a great way to put it. The mismanagement is one of the reasons why we're seeing this explosion and we're seeing the variants, right? Absolutely. The variants are what we need to be concerned about, because the vaccines may or may not be protecting us against it. And I think this morning I read that the Delta variant, because it's so highly transmissible, has become the most that's the leading cause for the infections. And I think 85 countries have experienced a spike due to the Delta variant. And part of that is because, you know what, the vaccinations didn't happen. Countries opened up too soon, in my opinion. There's a number of things, right?
Yeah.
I think we all have to, everybody's tired. I'm tired. I'm tired of the masks. I'm tired of the social distancing, right?
Absolutely. I mean, even we've been at with, this for like almost 2 years, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's been a year and a half. But, you know, it's like by the time when everything truly like fixes itself, we'll be 2022, right?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, 100 million people around the world, a little over 100 million people around the world have been double vaxxed.
Yeah.
Right? Which, you know, I'm one of those people, thankfully. And what can I say? It's, we all got to do our part to ensure that we can all have, you know, not only a safe future, but a future where we can go back to a semblance of normal. Right. But, you know, we all have to push it together. But it's an interesting little factoid to know that, yeah, you know, it turns out that not having the vaccine might mean that you might die. Who knew?
Mm-hmm. Right. Who knew?
Yeah.
I'm just going to pop in a slight, like, happy place nugget. Okay. So I just started watching this, Chris. I don't know if you've seen it, but I do encourage you to see it. It's called Sweet Tooth. It's based on a DC graphic novel.
Okay, so I've read the graphic novel, and the show is nothing like the graphic novel. That's why.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, all right, fine. I just started watching it. You know, I've seen the first two episodes.
And you put it into your happy place because it's kind of feel-good kind of thing. Graphic novel is straight-up brutal. Like, you know, it's like Berserk-level brutal sometimes.
Oh, shoot. Yes. Okay. All right. Now we're going to go back into the war room. Okay. Yeah.
And so our final little story of the day is Nancy Pelosi has announced a January 6th, I don't want to say the word commission, but more like a House committee.
Right.
Examining, the event of January 6th and trying to get deeper and investigate into what happened and why it happened. And realistically speaking, when I see this, when I see who's doing it, when I see what's going on, I don't want to sound too cynical, but this is what I want to sort of remark. This sort of commission or committee will lead not to any real hardcore revelations. It will not cause any arrests or change, you know, policy in a significant and effective way, right? What it will do is that it is Democrat Benghazi.
Right.
Right. Where Benghazi, you know, was an important event, but, you know, relatively, you know, across the world and out of the control of individuals around it, they used it as a pinning point for Hillary for a very long time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Trying to keep it essentially in the zeitgeist, trying to keep it in everyone's mind.
Right, yeah.
That's not the case for the January 6th Commission is to do that same sort of strategy, keep Trump tied to this January 6th. You know, insurrection, you know, the word insurrection, you know, treason, traitor, you know, tie it all to Trump and keep it within the zeitgeist, keep it within the news, keep it in people's minds of the events that occurred. And it is a political move because if this, I mean, and the reason why I call it a political move is because its bipartisanship will be difficult. And I don't see any effective sort of policy changes or anything that will really be done to elucidate what people, I think, already know. Right? I think people already know the depravity and the evil of what happened. And that they're going to... I think that they need to now, you know, pull that effective strategy of keeping it within, you know, of keeping everyone, of, you know, understanding and available of keeping everyone in that mindset of what happened and not forgetting it.
Yeah.
Right? And yeah, as a political strategy, it's a good one, but because it's not going to amount to anything substantive or meaningful, other than, you know, trying to ensure a Democratic victory. And my goal, my thing has always been that if Democrats get too complacent, they're not going to actually give good policy changes. They're going to become state corporatists. They're going to, you know, follow the same interests that they normally do, right? And we're not going to see any meaningful change on large scale issues like, you know, that need to be addressed, whether it be the minimum wage or Medicare for all or, you know, college tuition, any of those very important, you know, policies need to be, you know, examined. But if Democrats rest on their laurels by the fact that, hey, from now on, you know, all we have to do is, you know, talk about, you know, like turn into the Republicans and just Benghazi this whole situation, that's not what we want either. We want actual substantive change and policy that, you know, tries to combat this insanity.
Right. I agree with you. Yeah, I don't think it's going to be, I don't think we're going to see any policies come out of it. I do think it's to continue to keep it in the news cycle. Yeah. Here's the thing though, Chris, I don't think we should ever forget January 6th.
I agree. I think it's, here's the thing. The only reason why I'm not, like, I think it's important, and it's absolutely necessary because people do forget, and then the foolishness of trying to, you know, when people hide this sort of thing, right, and try to obfuscate and go like, oh, it was Antifa, it was this, it wasn't what you think, oh, there was secretly this, were the FBI involved, right?
Right.
Like, all this insanity that you know, comes up, we need to ensure that it is not forgotten. That and then the perpetrators of which, who Trump is. I mean, it's very clear that, you know, he commanded his followers to march on the Capitol, and in their fervor and stupidity, they decided to freaking, you know, actually attack it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And right. We're lucky that they weren't organized and they weren't smarter.
Yeah. Right?
Because if they were, there would have been more bodies, and there would have been insurrections, and there would have, I mean, they wanted to hang Mike Pence, right?
Yeah, the thing is, Chris, I have a really hard time believing, like, I don't understand why, you know, the Republicans just have such a hard time talking about January 6th. Like, well, why won't they acknowledge it?
Because it's their supporters, the people who will vote for them, and they can't come to the conclusion that the people who vote for them don't really like democracy that much, right? Especially when they lose.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because how can they lose? The other guys must have cheated.
Yeah.
You know, they'll lie and they'll just destroy, you know, their democracy because they don't like it. I mean, freaking Democrats hated it when Trump was elected, right?
Yeah.
They didn't march on the Capitol and try to run it down. They did what you're supposed to do. They protest.
Right.
All in all, I'm just it's a disappointing state of affairs that we're in, and I hope that more is done. But yeah, let's try to get out of this sort of thing and realize that the political machinations will be political machinations always and forever.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. They will. You know, depending on who's the Speaker of the House, right?
Yeah.
And on that note, I think this is a good place for us, yeah, to end our war room and pivot to our happy place.
Yeah. So in our happy place, let's just go straight into it because there's a lot of interesting stuff that has come out. Mainly in that, you know, I know that you've been trying to catch up on Loki and you watched episode 2 and then you got the sort of revelation that happened at the end of it. And while you haven't watched episode 3, the general consensus, and I fit into that sort of consensus, is that it's kind of boring.
Great.
And it's because it's sort of like it's a 6-episode series, right?
Yeah.
And when you have 6 episodes, you don't have a lot of, like, you need
to... You don't have a lot of time to, like, fluff,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, to faff around, right? And so if you're going to use the time, you're going to need to use it effectively. One of the effective ways to use that time is to tell character backstory. This entire thing has been very vague on character backstory, except for characters that we already know. right? We already know Loki's backstory. He's the exact same Loki, except the one difference is that he didn't turn good, right?
Right.
But he knows the events of what his future was supposed to be, right? So he's like, we have a Loki with the personality that we know, with the events that are exactly the same, and his variance is that Thor, the Dark World didn't happen, thank God, and mm-hmm. he didn't die in Endgame, and he didn't change his heart in Ragnarok for no reason, right? Like they've reset his character development, and we have to redo all of that important character development to get him back there, or we're not. And then with the introduction of Lady Loki, right?
Yep.
Who's not really Lady Loki? With that introduction, we've gotten bigger. We've seen, you know, what's going on the larger scale, right? We're looking at characters and going, holy crap, you know, there's even more going on. But despite that, the third episode faffs around and it doesn't actually give us more detail on Lady Loki. It's very limited. It gives us more stuff on regular Loki, which we already know.
Mm-hmm.
This episode is definitely the weakest so far, and out of a 6-episode season, right, 1 week episode can severely, you know, destroy the pacing, can really make it so that that's a glaring problem and you better fix it, right?
Okay, yeah.
And so far, that's the problem with all the Marvel shows right now, is that the Marvel shows have been, like, they've been, like, their quality is so inconsistent, right? Because it's, like, they're episodes that are amazing. They're episodes that are terrible. There's episodes that don't make any sense, right? There's, it's so inconsistent going on, and that's the problem, is that, you know, like, they rely on so much, and they sort of, like, drop the ball, especially towards the end. I mean, WandaVision fell apart more towards the end, right? Same thing with, Captain America.
Well, I think they're using them as vehicles to set up, right, as much as possible where they want to go.
Yeah, I was talking to someone earlier, and you know, they were telling me it's like, what these things are is just very, very long Marvel movies, which means they don't have really good act breaks for end of episodes or movement in episodes. So a 6-hour long movie, while I love the idea, it works when you can watch it all together. It doesn't work very well when you have to watch it individually.
Yeah.
Right? And when you're telling single long form storylines, right, a binge watch is a very effective way to do it, especially with 6 episodes. You can do that in an afternoon.
Right. Yep.
Right.
Right.
I think here's the thing. It's like WandaVision, Captain America, Winter Soldier, this would have worked better, right? If they did, you know, like, released it all at once. But they need to build that hype engine. They need to continually, you know, get people back and just do whatever they can to build hype. But what they lose in the process is that sometimes that hype builds to theories that turn out to be impossible, and then the disappointment occurs, right? Mm-hmm. When essentially people goes like, what I had in my hand was way better than what we got.
Right.
And you don't want that. You never want essentially, oh yeah, what you had in your head was actually, you know, what you wanted. So yeah, Loki, you know, is in a weaker position. You should see episode 3 and I wonder what your opinion would be.
Okay. Well, I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to save episode 3 and 4 together. It's too late for me to contribute to this discussion. Yeah. I'm sorry, guys.
No worries. But nevertheless, on the other side of events, right? You know, something that we were thinking about, it's like, what else out there is there? You know, like, what can we talk about in terms of the entertainment thing? And Loki brought up an important question for me that I want to examine for the sake of the future of the Marvel Universe, specifically the X-Men, right? Yeah. The Marvel Universe, the cinematic universe as we stand it, has this very long and very intricate timeline over, you know, 10 years and like 22 movies. It goes even further. A ton is going on.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Despite that, right, the mutants have not ever been implicated or mentioned or given any sort of, like, you know, hints that they might exist. Instead, what we have is characters who are in the, you know, in the comic canon, mutants, but they are not mutants in the MCU, specifically people like Scarlet Witch and her brother Quicksilver. These characters were mutants. And they're not mutants in the MCU. How are they going to explain the mutant issue? Because in the MCU, we have this, like, hero worship of individuals and like you just have like this hero worship of characters, right? Of the Marvel heroes, which is fine. But when you
I think this is about it, right?
Like the mutants whole thing is that they're not worshipped. In fact, they're hated for the same thing of having powers.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I think Chris, this is where you know what they're trying to do with Loki. I think this is where it's supposed to tie in, right? I think they're trying to get, I think they're trying to open it up to a multiverse, the branches of the universe, so that they can bring in the X-Men. So I think that's how they're going to try to fold it in.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure. And you and me have talked about it too. Even the Eternals. Like, where were the Eternals, right?
Yeah.
Here's the thing is, Chris, you know what? It's these characters exist in the different universes. So it can't be that, you know, the Eternals were in the main timeline.
Yeah.
And they weren't, you know, even if it's offshoots, right? You're still going to have these characters in those branches. So I don't know how they're going to explain even the Eternals, because, you know, they're supposed to be these supreme beings, right, who are protecting Earth. But where the hell were they when all the shit was going down with Thanos?
It's a fundamental problem that pops up. Like, where were these characters? Where were these, you know, where were these, like, so-called freaking gods? And in the comic canon, they're actually related to Thanos, and, yeah, they're just doing this sort of thing. The Eternals looks woefully weird to me, because it falls that fundamental, like, story problems. Like, where the hell were you during, you know, Infinity War, Endgame, any of the other important stuff that was occurring in this universe, right? The Chitauri invasion, right? There's, like, where were you, right?
Yeah.
And
they
don't really have an answer. And the mutants fall into a similar problem, because unlike the Eternals, they have a long history, right? How are you supposed to explain how Hydra exists in this universe, part of the Nazi party, part of the the Nazi elite, right? And these individuals, you know, in Hydra didn't know about a kid in a concentration camp who has the ability to control metal.
Right.
They literally had under their thumb a mutant, one of the most powerful mutants in history, right? In World War II. The plot holes that develop by introducing the mutants and having them always be in the universe is way too big. And I think it would, like, the suspension of disbelief falls apart at that point. What is a half-decent scenario, as you said, is using Loki. You know, it's like taking these characters, which have been, for the longest time, an alternate universe because they were under the Fox umbrella. With Disney owning Fox now, so they're sort of brought back to the family. Which means, how are we going to explain or examine these characters in that context? And what do we get? We get, I think a half-decent solution with, like, saying, all right, multiple universes, the multiverse didn't exist before, now it does. We can sort of bring in the idea of mutants, sort of, like, perhaps even create, like, in Marvel Comics, they did this sort of run. It was kind of stupid, but they could try to, like, fit it working here called Battle World, where they mixed a whole bunch of universes together into one planet. They did this because they essentially did this weird thing where they killed off a whole bunch of their characters. One of them was Wolverine. Like, they killed off Wolverine, and then they did the Battle World thing, and then they got Old Man Logan to fill in that spot, right?
Right.
It was just sort of like a marketing gimmick that fell apart very quickly. But one of the guys who created Battle World was Doctor Doom, main enemy of the Fantastic Four. And Fantastic Four is the final film of the new phase coming up. Right? So there could be a merging of the universes by Doctor Doom, who is one of Marvel's best villains, but never told well in any sort of live-action format.
Yeah.
I want to see what they do. Knowing Marvel, they're just going to do the Fantastic Four and have a tease at Doctor Doom, because he's going to be like the new Marvel sort of overarching villain, more than likely. Unfortunately, the Marvel movies are a little bit formulaic, so you can kind of like call up a whole bunch of storylines very, very quickly. Taking that into account, you know, the X-Men and how they're going to be brought into the universe, if they're going to be done with Loki, if they're going to be done with Battle World through, like, you know, Doctor Doom, right? I know, like, they didn't announce right away that they're doing the X-Men, right, in this phase. right? They're waiting. They're trying to figure out how to do it. And I think how well the Eternals is received, how like, you know, how much that applies, we'll determine. But
But I think you and me have discussed this before, you know, Marvel's explanation of things is pretty weak,
yeah,
right?
they
Like,
generally they're not really good at retroactive continuity, like trying to
yeah.
retcon stuff. And when they do, it sort of goes like, wait, what?
Yeah.
And you know, like they set things up for the future, right? But they don't really do a good job of setting
Of
things up
explaining
from the
what, yeah.
past. Yeah.
Yeah, how does it all, how is that connection there? Yeah, I
Exactly.
agree with you.
And but yeah, so I want this to be good. I want to see if it, you know, if we can reach there. But until then, you know, processes wait and see, and see what's
Yep.
going on. And sort of like applying that to our discussion, I would want to talk about like what about the Fox X-Men movies? Like, which ones are your favorites?
So, I liked X-Men First Class a lot. Right, that was one of the. It was sort of like a reset, and it's probably because you know what I thought, McAvoy and Fassbender were just so great in it. I thought it was a good way to reset it. That was one of the ones that I enjoyed a lot. I can't say I enjoyed the subsequent ones like Days of Future Past or Dark Phoenix or X-Men Apocalypse. Like from that particular. Grouping, right? I can't say that any of those I enjoyed at all.
Of the original X-Men films, you know, X-Men 2 has always like, you know, been a fan favorite. Like the first X-Men was like the really one of the early superhero films. It was like 2000. I think it came out before Spider-Man, right? It
Yeah.
really like set the stage for a while that holy crap, like we can actually get good superhero movies.
Yep,
You
yep.
know, and holy crap, they did Wolverine Justice. Holy like they did a lot right and it sort of worked out. And they took some of the silly aspects and they modernized them. You know, like characters aren't wearing colorful costumes; they're wearing black and all that sort of stuff, right? You know, and
Yeah.
so yeah, it's very. It was a good take for the first X-Men movie. X2 really took it to the higher level. X, you know, X-Men United, sorry, X3, you know, Last Stand was kind of garbage. It really
Yeah.
wasn't good, right? It,
Yeah, I
like in my
agree.
opinion, almost killed the franchise. And then we got X-Men Origins Wolverine, which, for the love of God, is one of the worst movies ever made. Oddly enough, written by the guys who did Game of Thrones. We should have seen it coming, guys. We should have
Wow.
seen it coming.
Okay. They'll never live that down.
They shouldn't. I
Right.
mean, think about it. It's like that's the ending, and we're never gonna get a real ending because George R. R. Martin will never release the goddamn books.
Yep.
Right, and the reason why he won't release the books is because, you know, he just sort of was like, ah, the shows will never catch up. Oh shit, they're catching up. Oh shit, everyone hates the ending. These were actually my notes. Oh crap, no one's gonna like my book. Let's not release it. That's a theory, of course. I'm not sure if any of that is actually happening, but it just fits to me in my head canon at least.
All right. Thanks for going into the minds of George
George R.R.
R.R.
Martin,
Martin,
yeah, you know
Chris.
me.
Thank you
I
for
have the
that.
secret
Thank you for
connection.
that insight.
I'm
Yep.
deep inside with
Thank
you.
you for that insight.
But nevertheless, yeah. So X-Men Origins Wolverine, so horrible. But and then but there was a so but the Wolverine was pretty good, and then Logan. Ooh, I mean you don't get better than that.
Yeah, I
That's not just a
agree.
good superhero film. That's just a good film.
Yeah, it was. I agree with you. I enjoyed Logan.
Yeah, but of those you were talking about, like of the McAvoy era stuff, I really did enjoy Days of Future Past. I think that was like the moment where we really got a cool mixture of like, and but like of like you know the past, the future, and all this sort of stuff. There's one fundamental problem with that movie though, is that it because of the ending sequence where Wolverine wakes up, you know, like back in you know his present time period, way in the future. Right,
Yeah.
and everything is fine. It sort of destroyed all of the freaking momentum of the series because we knew that everything would be fine. So why are they like? It's like okay, X-Men Apocalypse is coming. Well, I know everyone's gonna be fine. I saw they're all alive in the future, right?
Right, yeah.
Oh well, Dark Phoenix is coming. Well, I know that they get through the Dark Phoenix saga because I saw them alive in the future,
Yep.
right? Logan happens, which is like in the future, and
But it's
everyone's dead.
post,
Yeah, but it's
right?
way after, And it's like, oh, and then, but it destroys Days of Future Past because we're like, hey, guess what? All that work that we put in for saving the mutant kind didn't work. They're all dead anyway. Right? Like, there's, like, the one fundamental problem with the X-Men movies is that there is no such thing as good canon. There is no such thing as continuity. They keep on changing stuff, and it never fits. That being said, individually, some of these movies are totally great and totally fun to watch. And, of course, like, you know, despite what you... Despite, you know, the bad, you know, films, there's always been one consistent, you know, like, you know, actor who's just brought his A-game every single time. And in every movie he's in, he's one of the most important characters and the funnest to watch. And you're always happy to see him. It's Hugh Jackman as Wolverine. Right.
Yep. You know what? Those are really big shoes to fit for anybody else.
I have no idea how they're going to step into. My only, like, one of the things that I'm so sad about is that we will never actually get to see Hugh Jackman in, like, the MCU, because I think he would have rocked it in there. I mean, can you imagine, like, if they, like, say if, like, they eventually, the MCU is going to be rebooted. There's going to be a major event. They're going to reboot it. They're going to give you a new Captain America, new Iron Man. They're going to do all of it, right? It's a matter. It's going to happen eventually. There's going to be a big old reboot, and it's going to be some sort of new universe loving ending event. And, you know, it'll be like after, like, Marvel Phase 6 or something like that. Who knows? Right? But when that occurs, right, when we get, like, the new Captain America movie, right, you know, I'm just waiting for that moment where, like, you know, you see that freaking Wolverine's part of the Howling Commandos fighting with Cap back then, right? Because they have these characters back, and we get to see how these characters were in it. I mean, Wolverine is one of the most, like, he is one of the best Marvel characters in general.
Yeah.
You know, I often, like, you know, to bring it back to our discussion that we had last week, Wolverine is the guts of, like, Marvel, right?
Yeah, yeah,
because
yeah.
his life is just an unmitigated disaster from one point to the next. Right, and like that stoic character is so good, and they did it, and they do him great justice, and I would love to see him in his interactions with other heroes. You know, I would love to, you know, like, Wolverine is, you know, one of those characters that is in every single super team in Marvel. Right, he's in the Avengers, he's in the New Avengers, he's in the Dark Avengers, he's in X-Force, he's in X-Men, he's in G-Squad, he's in Alpha Flight, he's in the Canadian team, he's in everything. Oh, he's a villain, he's part of Apocalypse's crew, he's the Horseman of Death, right? It's like, he is, like, the most important, like, he is in everywhere and everything. He's a member of the Hand, he's the head of the Hand. Right, like, there's, like, his team affiliations are massive, and so like that character, the next person who does it, they're going to have him in a lot of stuff because he's so important.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just the only thing I'm sad is that Hugh Jackman, who always brought his A game, who always was you know, what can I say, 18 years, only one Wolverine, man, he was. Like, I'm just so sad that he wasn't able to fulfill and finish his legacy with two things. One, being part of the MCU and that shared storytelling experience that loved canon, that loved continuity, that was all about trying to maintain, like, the semblance of, like, one story across multiple films, across multiple characters, right? I would love to have seen him in that. And two, I mean, we never got to see Hugh Jackman in the yellow spandex, man. Right?
With his yeah, I'm wondering if he might do a cameo or something.
Hopefully. I mean, the only place where I mean, I
that
see
would
him
be so cool,
cameo,
right?
The only place where I see him doing a cameo is probably not as Wolverine, but, you know, in, like, the Deadpool 3 movie. Right? I can totally see him being Deadpool 3, and then, you know, it's like, I'm not Wolverine. He goes, like, and, like, just Deadpool, just bring it up, please. Come back. Right. It's like, I need you. He goes, like, I don't know who you are. He goes, like, stop talking like you're an Australian. Right? But, yeah, what can I say? Like, that's the only way I can see them doing it. Because, you know, he is getting up there in age and, you know, maintaining that Wolverine goddamn ripped-ass body is next to impossible without, you know, steroidal help. So, you know, what can I say? and let him enjoy his retirement. Let him enjoy, and when I say retirement, retirement from the character. And yeah, let's give it to someone else, and let's do the hard job of like trying to find it. I mean, I just don't know who would do it. I've seen everyone from Tom Hardy to Henry Cavill, right, as possible choices, right? But if I think who's going to be doing it, I think they're going to go comic accurate. It's going to be a short dude.
Okay. Yeah. Right?
But yeah, but what can I say? I'm excited and I want to see it.
I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how they do it. But yeah, so Chris, any other that, what did you think of the newest one? I know it was supposed to reset. Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
because that's the next one coming out, right?
I believe Black Widow's coming out first, but that one's coming out.
Yeah, but Black Widow's almost like a prequel, right?